Talia, Reese, and Julia do it so well. Shows, shows, show, shows, and tell.
Hello, everybody. My name is Talia.
I'm Julia.
And I'm Reese.
And this is Shows and Tell, the podcast where we tell you how your favorite show became your favorite show. Yes, it is. Julia?
I don't think anyone was debating that. But
You know what? Maybe we have some like new time listeners or something. I just wanted to kind of like give everyone the gist. You know I love a tagline.
Wait, should we do a refresh of like who we are for the new listeners?
Yeah. My name is Talia.
I'm Juge.
Well, we said our names. I thought we were gonna explain.
Yeah, say how we know each other.
We're three besties that went to the same college but met at a children's television show internship in the summer of 2019, and then remained really close friends until we graduated from Tulane in 2020. And then we all three love television. We love entertainment. We love
New York
culture. We love New York, where we all live. And we were all like, let's do a pod on all our favorite TV shows and kind of say how they got going. And that's what we do.
Good intro. Yeah, that was great, T.
Yeah, no, that was pretty concise. I was happy with that. I just want to say, we are doing Fleabag this week.
We are.
I want to, just from the get-go, say I truly think this is the best show we've covered to date.
Wow. Better than Avatar?
Good question.
That's tough. I forgot I did Avatar.
Yeah. Reese was saying that he thought that Avatar was one of, like, the best made television shows of all time.
He said it was perfect.
Perfect, yes.
It's tough to compare the two because of how, like, wildly different they are.
Yeah.
Where one's, like, classic, you know, storytelling, whereas, like, this is a lot more artistic in the way that it goes mm-hmm. about it, and it takes a different route and, you know, actually, like, dealing with the plot and everything like that. But I would say, I don't want to put one over the other. I'd say they're equal. But
no, like, you don't have to compare.
You know,
apples and oranges.
You know how much I value Avatar. I think Fleabag is just as well made and important.
Wow, cool.
But would you say it's perfect?
Because of the fact that there's not going to be a season three, I can say that, yeah. I would say it is.
Cool.
Wow. Nice.
All right.
Good to know.
That is a good place to start, unless either of you have any tidbits you'd like to share about how you're feeling today.
I'm just tired. I don't know about you.
All right. Let's cut that out. Talia, you want to get us started?
Yes. Okay, guys. I have a very important, special thing to say. So as we know, I live with two lovely ladies, Allie and Emily. And when I said that I was doing Fleabag, my friend Allie was like, please, please, can I write your outline? So this episode is actually ghostwritten by one Allie Burton, and she really did a lovely job. She is so passionate about Fleabag, so I'm really going to try to channel her energy in here, and I will be reading her notes in her tone. So... well, how about this? Let's start off and ask both of you what your relationship to Fleabag is. I will say that mine is I have watched both of the seasons multiple times over, and I find that I learn something new every time I watch one of the episodes. I find something new to laugh at. I find something new to admire. So it never really gets stale. I even, like, when we were rewatching for the podcast episode, I was like, well, like, do I really need to rewatch? Like, I kind of know everything. I've seen it all so many times. And then we rewatched like four episodes last night with absolute ease. And just like every line was, it felt fresh to me. So that's kind of my stance on it. And obviously we know Reese is an admirer as well. So if you want to speak.
Yeah, sure.
Reese, you may.
I didn't watch Fleabag when it was coming out, when it first came out. I watched it for the first time over the past 2 months. Like, I watched season one like 2 months ago, and then season two I finished yesterday. I have like watched most of season two, but then I finally like just sat down and like went through it all again. I just put off the finale for a while. But I had always, like, any time, because people know I like TV and film and stuff, so people often try to give me recommendations. They're like, oh, you need to see this. And I'm like, seen it. And then Fleabag would come up, and I would be like, oh, you know, like, I've been meaning. And then when I said I've been meaning, they'd be like, you must watch this show. This is right up your alley. This is so good. And I was like, okay. I had nothing against watching it. It was just like a matter of just putting it on one day. But I am so glad I did. It is such a well-made show.
Yeah.
I'm sure we're going to get into it, but like, I have absolutely zero, I can't find anything to critique.
No qualms.
No, like, there really isn't. Like, from a technical standpoint, from a narrative standpoint, from a writer, like, direct, everything. Everything just hits the mark. And I love, to start out, are we going to be discussing spoilers? Like,
we're going to talk about the whole.
Okay, so we're assuming the listener.
I will probably mainly focus on the second season. We're going to talk about both, but my knowledge lies with the second season.
Okay.
But like, there will be definitely spoilers.
We're assuming the listener has watched all of it.
Yes, and okay. I will say that any episode of our podcast that you listen to, you can assume that you will hear spoilers.
Yeah. So anyway, like, I just love that, like, not only how tight the story is and how clean it is, but also just the fact that it ended so well. There is no reason for there to be a season three, at least not yet. There's nothing that I think she could explore right now that would do justice to the character and to the show. I'm so glad that I finally watched it. And, you know, it really is, like, I'm sure upon rewatch will quickly become, like, a top five, like, favorite of mine.
I'm sure. Jude?
So I literally knew nothing about Fleabag before today. I had heard of it, obviously, but literally never seen it. I feel like most of the shows I haven't seen that we do, but I've at least seen, like, a few episodes or, like, know something about it or know what the plot's about. I literally didn't know anything. So, not gonna lie, I was, like, a little bit confused watching the episode today that we picked.
Okay.
But I thought it was good. I definitely want to, like, go back and rewatch. I like that it's only two seasons because I like shows that are shorter. And, yeah, I'm excited to learn more.
Cool. Well, I will definitely take you guys through. Okay, so let's start off. I'm going to read what Allie wrote. She wrote, first of all, I would like to say that I'm honored to write this outline as I'm Fleabag's number one fan and Chosen Tells. And I would say that that's very sweet. And I will also add that when I came home from work today, both Allie and Emily, from their own perspective rooms, were just, like, singing our theme song. Like, they were just like, oh, the theme song's been stuck in my head all day. So
the Shows and Tell theme song?
The Shows and Tell theme song. So
shout out to Leah.
Shout out to Leah. Fantastic theme song that Julia's sister wrote for us. So I loved that. So I'll give you guys the basic plot. This is, well, we're going to be focusing on season two. And one of the ways that season two opens up is they say this is a love story. So Fleabag is a British comedy created by and starring Phoebe Waller-Bridge, who may be in this, will be referred to as PWB, if I feel that that is easier to say than Phoebe Waller-Bridge. The series follows Fleabag, which they never say, like, the actual name of her character.
Interesting. I was going to ask that.
I love it so much. It's so smart.
It's great. And then I'm going to get into all of the characters, but a lot of the characters also don't have names. Like, some of them do and some of them don't. So they also just have, like, descriptive nouns. So her character's name is Fleabag. So it follows Fleabag as she navigates family, work, sex, a lot of sex, love, and a lot of loss too. The show follows Fleabag through two seasons of her life. The first explains her dark past, her family dynamics, the different ways she was, like, unraveling both with her romantic life and her family, and her quote-unquote Fleabag ways. And the second season shows her journey to self-acceptance and healing with a little help of a hot priest. So that's a good little synopsis. And before we get into the background, I'll say that the three of us watched, so my favorite episode, hands down, is the one that the three of us watched, which is season 2, episode 4. And it's the one where Fleabag and the hot priest are really getting to know each other. So essentially, Fleabag's dad is getting remarried to, like, her late mom's best friend.
Godmother.
Her godmother. And she's pretty horrendous. She's pretty insufferable.
Can we stop just to applaud Olivia? I love Olivia Colman so much. And she is such a lovable person, both on screen and off screen. And the fact that she plays such a despicable person, it just works. Oh, she is such a
You know what vibe she has? An Umbridge vibe. Like a Harry Potter Umbridge vibe. Because
I would say it's like, it's so much more nuanced, where it's like, Umbridge is like, yes, nuanced, a word. Umbridge is so much more like, on the face, you feel it. Whereas like in this, it is just like, there's times where I'm like, oh, the godmother's in the right. Like, she's always walking that line, although like she's always so bitchy.
Yeah, but like, it, you know, not, she's evil.
I know, but it's not as, she doesn't wear it on her sleeve as much, but like, it's all those like small little lines, as opposed to like how outwardly evil Umbridge is. Just like the little quips that
of like the facial expressions.
Yeah, she'll just say something and then Fleabag gives like a quick glance to the camera and
So the second season revolves around the godmother and her father are getting married, and they bring in a priest. The priest is hot, played by Andrew Scott, who's very handsome.
He is handsome.
He's very handsome. Fleabag and the priest just like start getting to know each other, and obviously like Fleabag sees everything sexually at first, so like makes a lot of sexual comments about him. This episode that the three of us watched is like the beginning of the episode's like they're kind of just like walking around the town. She takes him to her place of work, which is a guinea pig cafe. A cafe that's themed by guinea pigs.
Hillary.
She has her own guinea pig named Hillary, which I had two guinea pigs. They both died pretty.
I had a guinea pig too. Actually, I think I had two guinea pigs also.
Yeah, mine died pretty horrific deaths. We can talk about that at the end of the episode.
Can you eat guinea pig?
I think some countries eat guinea pigs. Yeah.
Nice. Okay.
I hated my guinea pig, and I had 4 hamsters.
Ew. That's great. So they're walking around. They're getting to know each other. The hot priest, as he is a priest, is like asking her a lot of personal questions. And it's just so apparent that because no one is ever asking her personal questions and she's just making a joke kind of out of her life. Like she doesn't have her best friend anymore. She doesn't have her mom anymore. They both passed away very recently. Her dad is very aloof and cold. Her sister struggles with her own intimacy and emotional connection issues, and so just nobody's asking her deep questions. So they're walking around the town and the priest is asking her questions and she's just like deflecting, or she'll put it right back on him. And as Reese just mentioned, such a big part of this show is that Fleabag breaks the fourth wall all the time. So that means she'll look into the camera at us, the audience, and talk to us or make some comment. So she was doing that the entire first season. And it was just like, that's her thing. No other character does that. And then in the second season, we're walking around with Fleabag and the hot priest. And he's talking. And she's saying, like, he's so hot, commenting on his body, whatever. He says some type of sentence. And she goes, ugh, like, his beautiful neck. And then he goes, what? She goes, what? He's like, oh, what'd you just say? You said, like, his beautiful neck. And she goes, no, I didn't. And then she like turns to us and says to us like, what the fuck or something. And he's like, you're doing it. Like you're going away for a second. So like, that's nuts.
I like that.
So basically it's absolutely brilliant. So we're seeing that like, he can see her. Like he can see her in a way that like nobody else can. We're getting that before they're even romantic with each other at all.
That's interesting.
That's the first half of the episode. They're sitting in the guinea pig cafe and he keeps like prying her with questions. She like has to almost says that her friend died and she's just getting so uncomfortable. And eventually, like, it gets too tense and the conversation ends. And then the middle of the episode is kind of this whole homage to Fleabag's mother's funeral. So we're seeing, like, the distance between her and her dad, and basically her dad being like, yeah, your mom was super outgoing and bubbly and funny, and, like, I didn't like it. And it's obvious that Fleabag reminds her dad of his late wife, and, like, that's why he can't really handle her. And then the last half of the episode, after she had this whole scenario of just, like, thinking about her mother's funeral, she decides that, like, she's not a religious person, and that's such a big, like, kind of theme within the relationship between the priest and Fleabag, because it's, like, I think she really connects with him, and, like, they get each other, but she cannot understand how somebody she feels so connected to devotes his life to something that she can't understand at all. So she goes to church. I think she's just trying to find, like, something. And she starts to, like, try and pray, and then she hears, like, blasting of music. She goes, like, back into the office, and she sees the priest. He's drunk. He's, like, trying. He's, like, kind of short, so he's, like, trying to hop up and get, like, this extra alcohol bottle. And they just start, like, they just start flirting. Like, the sexual tension is there. It's palpable.
It feels palpable. So organic and so natural.
Love that.
I'm just, like, sitting there. Like, I watched this episode last night. I was just sitting there.
Me too.
Shoulders raised. Yeah. Like,
I love when you can, like, feel the tension through the screen.
And they get 110%. They get it so right, earlier in the episode, where it's, like, they both start talking at the same time. And they, yeah. It checks all the boxes. Ugh.
Exactly. So they have a little flirty conversation. He's like, come on, I want to show you something. He brings her into the confessional box. She starts confessing all her sins. And she starts confessing all her sins. Blah, blah, blah. She has this big kind of really interesting breakdown where she's just like, I don't want to make any decisions for myself anymore. I just want somebody to tell me what to wear in the morning, tell me what to eat, tell me what to think, tell me who to hate. Like, and she has this breakdown, an emotional breakdown, where she's crying, and we don't see her cry that often. And then he stops responding, and you hear him just go, kneel. Or, like, she keeps being like, father, father, and he just goes, kneel. And he's, like, outside of the confessional, and she's literally kneeling, and he, like, opens the curtain. He's just standing there, and it's so epic. It's literally epic. And then they just lose it. And then they just lose it, and they make out for, like, literally probably 60 seconds. And then all of a sudden, this, like, hanging photo, I'm guessing, like, of Jesus in the background just, like, falls. And it has this big, and it's, like, so obviously this sign from God. And then he stops and looks at her, and he walks away. And then that's that. So it's a wild episode of television.
It's a great synopsis.
Thank you.
Synopsis.
It was wild, and I was just like, this is my favorite. We gotta talk about it. You know, now that we're just kind of in it and we, like, know what's up, I'll go, like, deeper into the characters.
That'd be great.
Yeah. I guess we'll talk about the priest because, you know, we're in it. Phoebe herself actually freaks out about how much she loves Andrew Scott in general, and then therefore, like, just is so in love with how much he brought to this role. The two actors met in 2009 while they were working on a play together at the Soho Theatre in London, and she said she was hesitant to put Fleabag with a priest in the second season because it seemed, like, almost too obvious to put Fleabag with a man of God, because it's just, like, they're polar opposites. Like, obviously that's going to make for great entertainment. But then she thought of Andrew Scott, and she was just like, he has to be this priest, this, like...
I have a question. Do they have any kind of, like, romantic involvement in real life?
No. He's gay.
Oh, sad.
Yeah.
But also, like, it's so smart, too, that he's not, like, a by-the-books priest, where it's, like, it's part of his life, but if, you know, he wasn't wearing the collar, I could see him in any other profession.
Which is why they vibe. Like, that was the kind of the point I was trying to make.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. He doesn't seem like a priest. So they met at the Soho Theater. She told him about the role, and then he took her to this small building that was just labeled Quaker Meeting. And the two spent hours talking about love, life, sex, religion, blah, 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 all this stuff. And then it's the same room where this scene the priest takes Fleabag to a Quaker meeting where they basically just all have to like just sit in silence until one person in the meeting stands up and like confesses something. And Fleabag stands up and I think she's like, sometimes I think if my tits were bigger, I wouldn't be such a feminist, right? That's what she says. Mm-hmm. And he just cracks up because like, yeah, he's a priest, but he also like gets the jokes. Like he gets it.
He has a sense of humor.
He has a sense of humor. That was really cool.
Also, I agree with her statement.
I don't.
I'm kidding.
And then another thing about Andrew in the last episode of the second season, aka the finale of the series, basically what happens with the priest is they end up having sex. And after the wedding, Fleabag is sitting at this bus stop and he comes to her and he's like in his full priestly garb and he comes to her and she's like, it's God, isn't it? And he's like, yeah. And she's like, okay, well, I love you. And he's like, okay, well, it'll pass. He just goes, it'll pass. And then eventually, which is, I mean, chilling and just as epic as Neil. Like the quotes up in here are wild. And eventually he does say, I love you too, which apparently was Andrew Scott's idea for him to just be like, I do love you too. Like it's not one-sided. I love God more, basically, which is so heartbreaking. So that's the priest. I mean, he was an absolutely, totally epic addition to the second season. I think that storyline really just like made the series.
Yeah, I was going to add something about him where it's just like, I really liked how they don't fully explore his character, where it's like, we know there's something up with his mother. And Fleabag, like a few times throughout the season, pokes at it. Where it's like, he'll be like, you know, I wasn't very close to her. And then she's like, do you want to? And then he'll switch the subject. And it's like, we know there's something he's running from. We know that there's a reason he joined the priesthood and that this was not his life that like he intended. And I feel like that just adds so much where it's like, I hate so often in television, things are over-explained or, you know, like they build up to something. And then it's like, finally the character breaks down and it's like, my dad would blah, blah, blah. And it's like, I love the fact that even at the end where it's like, we realize how important religion is to this man. We don't understand the extent to why he is where he is now. Yeah. And it's, I think it just adds, is just so much more to the show where it's like, we want them to be together so badly. We know that they're perfect for each other. They know that they're perfect for each other, but there's just some things that he can't share that will keep them apart forever. Like,
yeah, totally.
So well done. I love when shows exercise restraint.
Yes, there's, totally.
Yeah, agreed.
So that's a lot about our friend the priest. There are also just like so like the other characters. While this is not like the most cast heavy show, like the other characters are so dynamic. One of my personal favorites who grows on me more and more the more I watch this is her sister Claire, who is very like seemingly cold and like not perfect, but she's definitely not perfect, but like she's the more perfect one compared to Fleabag. Like she has her shit together a little bit more. She has, you know, her like high power job. She has a husband, but in reality, like her job sucks. Her husband Martin is literally scum of the earth, like absolute scum on the bottom of the earth. And really, I think Claire just like wants to be more like Fleabag. And something that I love so much is watching their relationship blossom throughout the series. Like the first season, I think Claire was kind of like just as cold to Fleabag as the dad was in a way. And then the second season is about like they work together as a team, the sisters. Like it starts with like Claire has a miscarriage and Fleabag tells everybody that it was hers. Like that's how the season starts. And then it kind of goes from like Fleabag really aiding her sister into like eventually leaving her husband and then like running off with like this coworker that her sister's in love with. And Fleabag confides in Claire about her relationship with the priest. And instead of being like, you're a fucking idiot, which I feel like she kind of would have done in season one, she's like, okay, girl, like go get it. Like good for you. Like, whatever.
But in season two, it's like that effectively happens where their roles flip-flop. Like by the season, by the finale, Claire does what Fleabag would do, which is leave the husband, run into the airport and chase, you know, like some random love interest.
By the way, the coworker,
Claire,
his name,
also Claire,
his name
yeah.
is Claire. And they're just both Claire, which is so funny.
Yeah, but then like, and then you have Fleabag doing what Claire would do, which is just like the priest, like when they obviously, and the priest is probably so close to just like Fleabag saying something and just being like, okay, let's do it. But Fleabag knowing that what's best for him, even though it's not in her own interest, is to leave him, is to let him be.
Totally.
And it's like, which is the Claire thing, which is what she would do. And it's like, one, Fleabag becomes mature, Claire not becoming immature, but just becomes more adventurous. And it's like, it was nice to see that as well, that arc.
Totally. Also, in the episode, I believe the final episode, when they have the wedding, Martin follows Fleabag and Claire like into the kitchen of the wedding and basically like gets down on his knees and absolutely begs Claire to stay with him. And he's just like, I know I'm disgusting, but I literally love you so much. Like, I would do anything for you. And he's really disgusting. Like, he really is horrible. And that whole thing was improvised. That whole monologue, that big fat monologue that he does, was totally improvised, which I always love hearing about what was improvised, because it's just like cool that people can come up with things that are so iconic on the fly.
Hot take, like, he's got, I don't know if he's a top three character for me, but he is so good in this show.
No, he's so good.
Like, the actor himself, just like, hats off to him, where it's like, he is the slimiest, like, I hate him so much, but so compelling to watch. And his dynamic with Fleabag is wonderful. Is wonderful. And their verbal sparring is, it really is next level. And it's like, they are like Batman and the Joker, where it's like, they could do this forever. And it's like, part of me is upset that they will never interact again because of the fact that they are each other's match, where it's like, there are times where Fleabag ends on top, and then there's times where he gets the last word, and it's like, they should be destined to do this forever.
I'm thinking about the exchange that they have when Claire goes off with co-worker Claire, and Martin, like, comes into the guinea pig shop and is, like, yelling at Fleabag, like, where the fuck is my wife, basically.
Yeah.
And then, whatever, they have a spar off, and then Martin is like, something like, well, you better be sleeping with a lawyer. And Fleabag's like, well, I'm already sleeping with a lawyer. And Martin's like, well, lucky lawyer. And then, like, they just like look at each other for a second, and she's like, what the fuck.
The thing where it's like, they obviously hate each other, but I really think it comes to the fact that they're so similar, like, where it's like, Fleabag would be him if she was bad in her
but
core.
She's good, yeah, but like, she's chaotic, she's good, and he's chaotic, she's, exactly. He's chaotic evil, she's chaotic good.
But oh my god, all of their shared scenes are my favorite. They are both so good together, and he is so good as that character, where it's like, anyone else plays it and it's like, you hate this guy and you don't want to watch him, where it's like, when he's on screen, I'm like, this is fun. Like, this is like, I hate him, but this is fun.
I agree.
Oh, he's so good.
So that's that. I mean, we have Claire, Martin, Fleabag, priest, and then the mom, the
godmother,
and the dad, and then some other reoccurring characters. And I mean, we could talk about the characters until the very end of time. There is literally so much to go over. I do want to talk a bit about like the background. Like, so we're gonna get it more into just like Phoebe Waller-Bridge and her mind, and kind of just like how everything was created. It was actually Fleabag itself. The concept was actually originally a 10-minute monologue. It was written for a short form storytelling night at a theater in London in 2013. And then from that, like, she created a 65-minute one woman show that.
Love that.
From that one woman show. Love that. Love a.
Independent woman.
Proactive queen, independent woman queen. Which I would like to see that one woman show also. Just like,
yeah, that'd be cool.
From that, like, BBC found her. They were like, do you want to write a pilot for us? she was like, yeah. And then Fleabag was born from there. So season one aired in 2016. It's always been on Amazon Prime. It had a fair amount of critical acclaim right from the get-go. First season's really Fleabag mourning the suicide of her best friend, Boo. It's told through a series of flashbacks, and we watch her deal with the heartbreak of losing her best friend through an assortment of sleeping with a million different guys, drinking a lot. And we actually do learn, big fat spoiler, that like such a big part of season one is like the whole time we're like, oh, Boo killed herself, but why? And it actually turned out that she did because her boyfriend cheated on her, and her boyfriend cheated on her with Fleabag.
Interesting.
And the whole season, like, as Fleabag is breaking the fourth wall and talking to us and confiding with us, which, like, you kind of feel like Boo in a way, because you're kind of like, oh, this is everything that she would be saying to Boo. But next to that, like, Boo is also, like, coming into the scene and talking, and in a way that she's obviously just in Fleabag's head and shouldn't be there. And it's just, like, so deep and dark and twisted that the suicide is on Fleabag's shoulders. And it's like she's helping her, but she's haunting her too.
Can I know we've touched on the fourth wall, and I'm sure we'll get there again. Can I discuss that a little bit right now?
Yeah, let's talk about it.
Do you want to start? I have like thoughts on season one and season two, fourth wall break. But if you have anything to say beforehand, before me just diving in.
No, we can let it flow.
Okay. Well, basically, what I love so much, and like what you're saying about season one, is that for so much, we get like a lot of flashbacks of Boo, and like they, obviously, if you're paying attention, you know that, like, where it's going. Like, I think it's in episode 3.
You think?
For sure. When I was suspicious the first two episodes, and I think it's episode 3, like, there's like that quick shot of a hand over pants, and Fleabag goes, not yet. And I was like, when she said that, I was like, that can, like, I had no more doubt. I was like, he cheated on Boo with her. Like that. And I was waiting for it to come out, and like, it did, which is exactly how I want TV to be, where it's like, they trust the viewer enough to know that like they could connect the dots, and then you watch it differently the rest of the season, knowing this, but not getting the confirmation. But back to the fourth wall break. What I love so much is that for us, it's like we are kind of outsiders, but also Fleabags. Like we'll listen to music while walking down the street as if everyone's watching us, as if we're the main character. Whereas Phoebe Waller-Bridge like made the show as if she's the main character and acts as though she is one in her own show. So like, not only is it breaking the fourth wall, it's breaking, I don't get like a fifth wall, because of the fact that it's like calling out TV conventions, which is also insane in its own right. But then not only doing that, but using the fourth wall breaks for narrative purposes, which is like, yeah, not just to be like Ferris Bueller, you know, like tongue in cheek, but like,
yeah,
the fact that we kind of play a part in her like kind of losing her mind, where it's like she likes to break the fourth wall because it's funny and because she's the like the main character, but it gets to a point where she can no longer block out all those bad memories, and us being there is no longer something that she can control, where it's like she wants to run away from our eyes, like us as voyeurs staring into her life and judging her, which we are. Like, I was like, this is fucked, Fleabag. And it's just nuts that, like, not like they use the fourth wall break to, like, excel the narrative forward, like, to propel it forward, which is so, so well done. And, like, in that, she's running away from it, whereas in season two, she's now, like, coming to accept herself. She's, like, forgiven herself. But then, for the first time, like you said, and like what we discussed, the hot priest starts to see her doing it. And for the first time, we see someone who can see like what we're seeing, like her just looking at the fourth wall, and yeah, finally someone gets her. And it's like, I love that instead of just rehashing what season one did with the fourth wall break, they were able to like evolve the show and also evolve the way that they use the fourth wall to define the character. Like, the fourth wall breaks are such, like, an integral part of her character. And it's, like, him noticing it is, like you said, he's knowing her better. Like, he's slowly getting more ingrained into her, like we do, where it's, like, we see her for who she is, and he is, too. And it's, you know, I could go on for hours, so I'm going to wrap myself up. I'm sorry. But
but this is wonderful commentary, and I do, like, I have a quote kind of PW Be My Girl explaining like her kind of whole thought process on that, which I think is cool.
Oh, I was gonna, can I say one final thing with the fourth wall break? I just love that, and like we said, season three is not happening, how it ends with her finally walking away from us.
Yeah, she says goodbye to the camera. Yeah,
she no longer needs us. Like, she can live her life, and it's like, it is such a nice way that she's come to terms with herself, and she's matured so much from season one to season two that by the end we're no longer,
she don't need us,
she doesn't need us, and okay, perfect. I'm done, thanks.
Thank you. But that's wonderful commentary. And she said I felt like it was symbolic of something that I can't really explain. For me, it was never a certain person, but I love that. For some people, it is that. I feel like it's that pressure of being watched and feeling watched and feeling like you're not being witnessed. Does what you're doing count for anything? Does it matter? But then the flip side of that is, if you're constantly witnessed, you can never really, you're too frightened to slip up or let someone see you be vulnerable. So she's constantly grappling with this need for the audience to be there to validate her, and also to leave her alone so she can experience things on her own. So for me, it was more about that. And I just think, like, that is just, like, how we all feel, like, about everything. Like, it's, like, friendships really in general. Friendships in general are just, like, be here and, like, listen to me talk, but now I need my space, and go away, and, like, but come back and listen and, like, be there for me. Like, that's just, like, all, like, friendship in life is, kind of. So I thought that was really cool. It's a really dynamic addition to the whole show. So we have that. Going forward, as we said, like, wildly critically acclaimed show. The second season actually came out, like, 3 years after the first, which I think is interesting that they decided to continue after definitely a bit of a break. Also, just, like, a really funny little fun fact is that you guys know how Obama puts out those, like, must watch, must read, must listen to list.
I know this. I know this, and it's so good.
Okay, so in the first episode, in the first season, there's, like, this scene of Fleabag watching an Obama speech and then starting to masturbate. So she's, like, masturbating to the Obama speech. And then Obama, like, put out Fleabag season 2 on that list.
That's,
and then,
so funny.
It's literally so funny.
Do you think Obama really makes those lists?
Yes. Yeah, for sure. I 100%.
Like, he definitely has his, like, social media person, like, is like, I know what you like, Obama. Let me put together this list.
I know, but he definitely has his hand in something. Well, Juju's the PR queen, so you really are the one to answer the questions.
I think he definitely, like, tells someone, I like these things, and then someone else puts them together.
Yeah.
I don't think there's anything on his lists that he hasn't at least seen some of. Or I don't think there's anything on those lists that are completely, like, if you were to ask him, what is this, he wouldn't know.
That's I agree with that. But there's some things, like, he has to, like, maintain his, like, PR relationships with, like, certain celebrities and stuff.
No, I'm sure, like, he's, like, if they're, like, we need to include this book, he's read at least, like, 3 chapters and has enough to say we're in conversation. But I don't think there's anything on those lists that, if asked off the cuff, he would not be able to respond to.
Agreed. I could just so see a PR person, like, pitching, like,
no,
someone's album to be on Obama's list.
No, of course. Like, that has, like, there's definitely, like, politics behind,
like,
it.
Like, when I worked in PR, we used to pitch, like, Oprah, like, Oprah's favorite things.
I believe you. I really do. That's why I was, like, you're the one that's going to know. In one of the many Golden Globes that she won, she referenced it. She was like, yeah, like, there was a masturbating scene to, like, this Obama speech in the first season, and, like, then I was on the Obama must watch list. So, like, that's so funny.
That is really funny.
So funny. So yeah, I mean, I think this show has a question mark 100% on Rotten Tomatoes, or like 99. I mean, it's like,
yeah,
high percentile. Overall, season 2 was nominated for 57 different awards, and of those 57 awards, she won 29 of them. So, I mean, that's literally over half. So, I mean, that's kind of that. Like, it's crazy. You know, that's that. There's not going to be a season 3. Like, she's commented and she said, as of right now, like, she just doesn't have anything else to say about Fleabag's journey. Who knows? Like, maybe, you know, when she's 50 and Fleabag is 50, like, she'll have something else to say. But for right now, they are out, which I think is awesome. Like, all three of us just talked about that, like, we like when a show can know it, that it's done.
Yes.
Yeah, there's really, like, there's nothing left to do. Like, I could see it, like, maybe if she were in, like, 10, 15 years, if we were to, like, catch up and she's married with kids. Or, like, something like that, where there's, like, a different angle. But, like, I can't see anything else. Like, they've, all the things that they've introduced about her character have been solved. So they would have to introduce a completely new topic or a completely new problem and solve it. And it just wouldn't have the same effect as, like, from season 1, episode 1, we know that, like, she has all of this to grapple with, like, the stuff about, like, finding someone that's right for her and dealing with the loss of Boo. Like, all of this is stated episode 1, which is why I'm so glad season 2 was a thing. But, like,
yeah,
there's not, like, yeah, they could explore the relationship with the father, but, like, they also, that's kind of resolved too at the end.
Yeah, it is
resolved to the point where it's like it will never be resolved, but, like, they're okay with that.
Yeah,
but I'm excited for her career. Like, she's gonna be in the new Indiana Jones.
Oh, my sick. God, I'm so excited for her career. There was, like, this amazing line in her SNL monologue. And it was, like, this was after, like, the big Emmy success. Yes. So she's, like, obviously everyone was watching Fleabag, like, talk of the town totally. Definitely deserved to be hosting SNL. And in her monologue, she goes, back in the day, horny women were to be feared. But now they're given Emmies.
I love
which
that.
Which I loved.
Yeah. No, she totally really is. Loved it. She's great. And, like, she just, like, she signed, like, a deal with Amazon Prime to, you know, make 3 more shows, I think. So it's like, well, she'll be around, which is just, it makes me so happy. I love her sense of humor. I love her performances too. Like, she's just got a great eye for entertainment. And, like, I'm so pumped to see her in an adventure film. Like, Indiana.
Yeah, that's really cool.
She's perfect for that. Like, and I really hope that, like, the writing on that movie and, like, everything, cause, well, Spielberg's attached, so it should be good. But, like, I'm just so excited to see her in that kind of role.
Also, just, like, personal tidbit, entertainment tidbits about her. She was in Harry Styles' Treat People With Kindness music video, where they both just wore, like, matching outfits and danced and, like, sprinkled joy all over the world. It was really, really, really cute. And she also directed Phoebe Bridgers' music video for her song Savior Complex, which starred Paul Mescal, who was Connell in Normal People.
And they have almost the same name.
Her, the two Phoebes. So she's just, like, got her hand in, like, all of my culture.
We love Harry Styles here.
Oh, God. I don't want to start talking about it. Yeah. I'm going to the concert in 12 days.
Oh, that's so soon.
I'm so excited.
We'll have to do a mini recap on the episode we record after.
Oh, my God. Fat recap. So, yeah, guys, we can talk about some comparisons, because that's kind of what I had. Do you guys have any questions?
No, I think this was a good summary. I'm sorry I didn't contribute more, but I was really just taking in everything you were saying. I'm definitely going to watch the show after.
Cool. Do you feel like you learned, Juju?
Yeah, so much.
That's what we're all about.
And I like watching knowing more about it, you know what I mean?
Yeah. Should we compare? I'm trying to think. Well, okay. We already know Reese thinks he's the hot priest.
Okay, I was gonna say Reese is a priest, but for a specific reason. And that is like, with like we were talking about like the priest, like you can tell there's like something to him that makes him a little bit like edgy, but we don't know why. And I think the same thing is for Reese.
Oh, that there's a reason why I make jokes, and but you don't know what it is.
That's fair.
Yeah.
Thank you. I was gonna say I just think our similarities are I boil down to two things, which is just like banter. He's good at banter. Like he's a good schmoozer. Yeah. I'm too, and also he has a dark sense of humor.
Yeah.
Which I also think I have. Where it's like he jokes about kind of stuff, and like same with me. That's about it. It's not like a.
It's not a you think you're hot thing.
No, it's not. I mean, he's like, I'm definitely like, whew, like really got me questioning out here. but he, but like, no, it's just like.
Which is healthy.
Yeah, but no, it's just like for me, like I feel like similar wavelengths. Me okay. and that character.
Yeah,
I would say also a little bit of the dad with the avoidance. Can I say that?
Oh, I really like that. You know, yeah, I guess. I don't think that's the first person. I like the dad character a lot, but I don't.
No, I'm just trying to antagonize you by like not giving to the priest thing. Like that's just what I'm doing.
Yeah, I like the dad character a lot, and like he's a character that like I would love to see a show about. Not like that exact character, but that kind of one where it's like we know Simple. There's something up with him, and it's and like it's always those scenes where it's like we're so close to just digging up what's there. Where it's like he's talking to Fleabag and it's like, you know, he's about to open up and finally be like, why am I with God? Like the godmother, like, why am I with her?
Yeah.
And
then, yeah,
like,
yeah.
She'll just pop in and it's like that it's gone. And it's, she walks that line so well with the show where we're always so close and they always touch upon things. And it's like, he sees Olivia Colman hit Fleabag and it's that never, you know, it's not spoken again. And it's, But yeah, no, I'd say I relate most to the priest.
No, you do. I'm just trying to be a little bit of a bitch here. I'm trying to think for me and Julia. Like, do you have any thoughts, Reese?
Okay, this is a hot take, and I apologize for it.
Okay.
I don't think either of you are Fleabag.
I don't either.
Yeah.
Like, I understand she's the main character, but it's like it's tough because she's like. Such a unique individual.
She's very specific. Like, you can't even make a generalization about her.
That's what I'm saying. It's like, I can't. I think more season two. I think Talia's season two, Claire, where it's
I agree.
She's not. Because she's not. Like, season one, she's cold, but season two, she's like focused and driven and. But like, also has that fun where it's like.
Which
we missed a little bit in season one. And then I think. Julia, even though we only get tidbits, is kind of like Boo. Where she's like, she's fun.
Sweet and funny, playful.
Aww. But like, yeah.
That's sweet.
So like that, those were my takes. And like, I was scared. Yeah, I was scared you guys were going to get offended.
No.
Yeah, but like.
You didn't say anything bad.
No. I was just because like, usually one of us is like the main character. But in this, it's just like,
she's so specific. Yeah. They give so much depth to her that we couldn't possibly just be like, oh.
And yeah, no. And like Fleabag. Everyone can relate to her, but it's like, no one is her. Like, it's just.
And that says a lot about like the character development.
Well said, Juju.
The one time I try to add an intellectual comment, you shut me down.
Yes, character development. Yes.
No, we're here for your participation.
As I add the fun to this podcast.
Do you guys have any disagreements with the character comparisons? I feel like...
No, because I was going to say Claire for myself, too.
Yeah. Claire, also, I'm just
And
surprised.
Julia for Boo, I probably would have said, too.
Yeah,
like,
right?
That's exactly
like
what I would have said.
It makes sense. But I'm surprised that it didn't get more nominations, which is...
I feel like it got a lot.
It got 57.
No. Oh, no, but that's like across all award shows. But I'm saying for like the Emmys... Like, I mean, look at Ted Lasso this season. You have every single supporting male character getting, you know, best supporting actor in a comedy series nomination. Like, you have Roy Kent. You have...
Brett Goldstein.
Yeah, Brett Goldstein. Love him. You have Higgins. You have Coach Beard. You have Nate. That's four.
They all get nominations.
They all got nominated for that same category. But I'm saying, like,
Holy
with this...
Shit.
I really could have seen, and it's like they didn't. Like, I could see Martin, like the drunk husband. He 100% should have got a nomination. Like, that's not an easy role. Like, it's not mm-hmm. easy just to play that hated person, but do it so well where it's like you still kind of like him, where it's like, I don't know if you guys disagree, but like, part of me still is like, oh, this guy is just so much fun to watch. And like, I don't hate his guts.
I mean, I don't hate him because I think he just needs therapy.
That's what I'm saying. And it's like he's so aware of how shitty he is. And it's, which is like, part of me is like, I kind of love him, but like, I obviously, it's like a weird where he feels like a person. He doesn't just feel like, let's put all of our hate on this one character.
Yeah.
Yeah, and like Olivia Colman's great, the dad's great, the priest, they're like all these small roles, not even small, like supporting roles. I'm actually surprised.
Nuts that Andrew Scott didn't get any nominations.
These are like really good performances, and they're not just like, you know, they're not just ham and fit, like super cheesy. Like, these are like really, to use the word again, nuanced performances. That I definitely think.
To give you guys context, we had dinner last Friday night, and like, which was really great. We had a really lovely dinner.
I felt really popular because I knew everyone there.
Julie knew everybody there. You know, you know when you know a word, like you've heard it your whole life, but you've just like never asked what it means.
Oh my god,
nuanced. So, like, that's why I feel about nuanced. And like, I've literally used it in a sentence, and I think I've used it correctly, but I still just like.
I think Reese just doesn't know what it means.
Reese and I had a long...
I do, and like, you even like debated me, and I gave you the word subtle, and that's the first word they use in the dictionary to describe it. But what I'm saying is, like, Olivia Colman's performance as like a, like, just as the example, like, as like this like really conniving, mean person is like a nuanced way of playing it, whereas opposed to her shouting.
Okay, but you wouldn't substitute the word subtle in that sentence.
No, but which is why I wouldn't use the word subtle, which is why I'm using
but
the
you
word
then
nuance.
You shouldn't use the word subtle to define nuance.
That's part of the definition. That's not the word, that it's not a synonym.
Okay, that's fair. Okay.
But I'm just saying, like, Olivia Colman, like, giving the tray to Fleabag, like, in the show is like, it is like this undermining thing where it's not like her telling her outwardly, like, do you mind, like, blah blah blah, like, I think less. It's just like all these small little things, like the lip quiver and like the eyes that she gives and stuff. It's all these small things that I'm so surprised they didn't get more recognition for, where it's like we're talking about them as like these amazing performances, but the academy didn't. Yeah, no, it's a little upsetting where it's like, no, award shows are like whatever, but I do think it deserved more than it already received.
I think this was I don't want to pat myself on the back. Well, we'll pat Allie on the back. I think she did a really
good. Thanks, Queen Allie.
Queen Allie did a really wonderful job of outlining the episode. Thank you, Allie. So I thought this was a good one, and I was trying to think if I had any grievances, because I was going to be like, oh, Reese, do you have any grievances? But I was like, maybe I could like try and go first, but I was just like, my life's like pretty good right now, so I don't really have any.
Okay.
To you guys. Julia, do you have any? So you can be a little contributor on the app?
I actually have been thinking about this all day. I don't have any specific grievances right now.
That's good.
I'm going to say this. My only grievance is the same grievance I have last week. I hate when people are bad planners.
Yeah. With our
do you wanna,
like, lives.
Do you wanna elaborate, or is it just...
No. I just don't like when someone, like, says they're going to make a plan and they don't follow through.
Same, and that's why we're besties.
Yeah, that is just my number one pet peeve.
I 100% agree, and I especially think because, like, I think you guys agree with me, but, like, our lives here are so, like, planned. Like, I have, like, plans backed up like next week and a half always, and, like, if you cancel or if you want to move something, like, that's not it. Like, you gotta stick to the plan.
Yeah, no, or just give the proper heads up, not like 20 minutes before.
Yes.
Oh, shit, sorry. Like, give a few days notice.
Oh, I have a grievance.
What?
Ghosting.
Agreed.
We're too old. It doesn't make any sense. Like, I've had multiple situations where, like, I haven't liked somebody. Like, I've gone on a date and I haven't, like, felt a connection or whatever. And I'll just be like, hey, like, really great to meet you. Like, thanks for the time, but, like, whatever, I don't see it.
But I feel like you should only say that if they try to see you again, because sometimes it's mutual and you don't have to
acknowledge. If it's a mutual ghost, then whatever. I'm saying like if one person tries to see you.
Yeah.
I think ghosting is literally the most immature thing in the entire world. We are literally
No, I agreed.
Old and we're like trying to like date in the real world on it. Like we're not in college.
Agreed.
Yeah, but it's also like if you think someone's ghosting you, then it's like you kind of dodged a bullet there, or it's like if
no shit. Obviously. And like I'm a good person.
I'm a good
person, asshole. So like I'm not gonna ghost because I'm not an asshole.
Yeah, but I mean also it's like but like then again it's like if I mean who are these like do you know them or is it like someone on Hinge where it's like
if you go on a date with somebody
I don't think you should ghost, but I feel like if you're going to, it should at least be someone you don't know.
Yes.
That's true.
But also
it's like, if your friend set you up with someone, like yeah, but like
No,
if
of
you have
course.
Like if you have like a terrible date with some guy and he's like hey, and then he goes.
Okay,
them, like,
clearly the situation that happened was I thought I had a good date and then I got ghosted. Like that's clearly what happened.
I wasn't picking that up. I thought you were just saying,
sorry.
Oh, okay. No, in that situation, if like you thought it was a good date and he's just not responding, yeah, that's pretty jerk move. Yeah. A little we should be friends and then like never talk again text.
So, yeah,
whatever. That's definitely been my grievance of the freaking week.
I have a question. Yeah. Have you guys ever become friends with someone that it didn't work out with them romantically? Because I feel like no one actually becomes friends with someone they went on a date with.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
So, well, somebody like people that I have been like close friends with beforehand.
Okay, that's different.
No, yeah, there's been people who it's like
just like a date. You mean like a Hinge date? Become friends with a Hinge date?
Not like no. Like I've known them slightly beforehand. We're not like friends, but like but yeah, became friends after because it's like sometimes there's just regardless of how attractive someone is, like it's sometimes there's just not a connection. Like,
do you guys think you can be okay? I have a hot take. Do you think you can be platonically friends with someone of the sex you are attracted to and not be attracted to them?
Yes.
At least a little bit.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. Yes.
I think everyone finds all of their friends at least a little bit attractive.
No, there's just like it's and it's like
well, everyone's attracted to their friends on some level because it's like you want to be around your friends. It doesn't need to be like sexual or romantic attraction.
No, yeah, not in a sexual way. Just in like you find your like you think that your friend's an attractive person.
But you said non-platonic.
No.
That's
not what I meant.
Platonic attraction is what we're talking about.
Yes, I'm saying you are a little bit attracted to all of your friends. Everyone is.
Platonically?
Yes, and not, like, you would never, like, not, like, sexually, just, like, platonically.
That's just friends.
I don't know.
I don't know what you're getting
Julia,
at.
Julia, you meant sexually.
No, I didn't. I didn't.
I think you did, because then you're just describing what friendship is. And
no, but, like, I wouldn't be friends with someone that I thought was ugly, is what I'm saying.
Okay. Fuck.
Reese, that means we're hotties.
I guess.
Like, I'm not, like, attracted to you guys, like, not platonically, but I'm saying, you both are attractive people.
I agree with you. Look at me. Jeez.
I have a grievance. People that go the wrong way in the bike lane?
Yes!
Mm-hmm.
What the fuck?
Do you think that you are the king of the world? Because let me tell you, like, I'm the king of the world and I wouldn't do that.
There's arrows, and it's like, I'm not moving out of the way. We'll get in an accident. I don't fucking care. Like, don't go down this one way, which is the bike lane going, you know, for the sake of this, up, and don't go down it. Don't do it. Another thing, don't stand in the bike lane. It's not a crosswalk. Yeah. Also, if you're crossing the street and you're not at a crosswalk, just because you're a pedestrian, that doesn't mean you can walk there. Like, I infuriates me and it's
yeah
so annoying.
I get so stressed out about bikers. Like I do everything in my way to like stay out of their way,
you know, exactly as it should be because they're going fast and
yeah
it's just like a car and it's like use like if you're a person walking on the street use the crosswalk just like as if you're on a bike use the bike lane and use it correctly if everyone just listen
but bikers can be really aggressive too.
I don't know, that's not to say that there's not bikers who are just like what the fuck to everyone and it's like all right dude like
yeah
you're on a bicycle you're going on the sidewalk you're weaving in and out of cars like
yeah
you're in the wrong here but I'm saying like me, who stops at yellows and like does everything by the rules. I don't need to have to worry about some like random person running across the street. That's a big grievance. Oh, I think I mentioned this last week. It's starting the day super cold and then ending, and then the day getting hot. It happened again today. It was cool in the morning. I was wearing a sweatshirt, sweating through my shirt. Disgusting. Hate it.
Disgusting. Yeah.
I hate that the sun's going down sooner.
No, I like that.
I have major grievance with that. You guys are weird. People who don't like summer are weird.
Say that I don't like summer. I just like fall. Like, look at my literal sweet orange fall flowers. Like,
I also have fall flowers.
Did everyone enjoy? I really thought this was a good one. I had a really good time talking to you guys.
Yeah, no, Fleabag, top notch. Great content. Solid show. Wait, who's next week?
I think me. Oh, I actually, I have like a list of a few shows I want to do, and I was going to ask your thoughts.
Wait, this is actually like a good way to end the episode so that we know what the, what's next week, Julia?
Okay, well, I have a few ideas. So originally I was thinking Nathan for you, but I feel like we've done a lot of like comedies recently, and I kind of want to go back to like the crazy reality shows.
Trash. So what are your, what do you want to do?
I have, like, so many ideas. One, when we were talking about Outer Banks, I was thinking, what if I did Tiger King and talk about just, like, the effects of that show? I was also thinking Dance Moms, which is one of my favorite shows.
Oh, do Dance Moms.
I like Tiger King, but, like, I feel like that's the moment's past. There's,
Dance Moms. That's
Outer Banks
that's
we just talked about.
Because like, there's so much TV that's come out of Dance Moms.
I love the clip of Tyra Banks where she's like, I walked into a gay bar, and who do I see sitting in a wheelchair?
It's Abby Lee Miller.
Abby Lee Miller.
I was like, what? Oh my god. I've never seen that show, so like, I guess I'm down
it's,
to watch.
Every like 2 years, I go into this phase where I rewatch the whole thing.
Yeah, I guess I'd
okay, I think
that.
You should do it.
Yeah. Okay. Cool. We're doing Dance Moms. I haven't decided which episode yet, but
okay.
Amazing.
All right, sounds good. Okay. Well, this was nice.
Love you too.
Good night.
And love you, listeners. Hope you have a great day if you are just starting your day with our lovely voices.
To all the listeners, I love you platonically.
So he finds you attractive.
And we find you attractive platonically.
Platonically. I don't think any of you are ugly.
We can just sense the vibe.
Because if you were, you wouldn't be allowed to listen.
No, you would not.
No uglies allowed.
You would be censored. You would like try to download, and there would just be like this pop-up like,
error.
Error. I'll go detective.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye.